Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia
and Beth.
And we are talking about something very cool and interesting today.
We sure are. We are exploring some places in Maine that you could possibly walk by.
Walking trails of Maine.
I don't have walking trails. I have places you could walk by, though. They're on roads. I couldn't find walking trails, and I'm not really good with directions, but they're cool anyway. And interesting.
You came up with the idea for this episode.
No, it was from your list.
Okay. All right. Well, either way, places in Maine, I guess.
Places in Maine that you could either hike to, drive by, walk by, locate on a map, or listen to a story about on Ghost Hunting in New England, your favorite spooky podcast. Did you just hear that terrible noise?
I did. What was it?
That was my shoe was just a little bit wet from the snow outside, and it just slid across the floor underneath me. Like, if I had been standing up, I would have completely fallen down, like cartoon style, like done a split. But because I am sitting, it was just my shoe moving around on the ground. No need to fear, dear listeners. All is well.
Well, thank God for that.
I'm going to try to stop making that noise, though.
Okay, Beth, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I think we rock, paper, scissors, and you started.
Okay. So my first story tonight is Compass Harbor Trail. Compass Harbor is located off of Route 3 in Acadia National Park up in beautiful, sunny Bar Harbor, Maine. It's home to a beautiful, fairly flat walking trail that isn't too long, beautiful scenes of picturesque harbor. It's also home to an abandoned mansion that was torn down, aka a haunted house, aka the old farmhouse, aka the door house. So I'll take you all way, way back in time to a man named George Door. So George Door is known as the father of Acadia, and he was named.
I'm sorry. Can you spell Door for me?
D-O-R-R.
D-O-R-R. Okay.
So he was the first superintendent of Acadia. He worked with John D. Rockefeller in the early 1900s to acquire and build Acadia National Park that we know and love today. George Door was an independently wealthy man coming from big, big money. And he devoted more time and effort to Mount Desert Island issues starting in the 1890s. And Mount Desert Island is right by where this is. It's in the harbor, okay? So his family had really big money, right? So the home that we are talking about tonight, the old farm, belonged to his family. And since he loved the area so much, he decided to move there and took the lead on land conservation and preservation efforts involved in the park. So this isn't like your regular little farmhouse. It's the name is very misleading, Old Farm, because it is a 30-room, gigantic, beautiful, stunning mansion. And I actually, even though it was demolished, I found an old photo of it that I'll put on our website because it's really beautiful. Neat. So yeah. So Door was a strong believer in transcendentalism, believing that the connection between nature and humanity was a spiritual one. So he saw the grounds of Acadia as a place of worship and cared for them as if they were the finest temple created for God. When I wrote that line, I was like, should it be the finest temple created for God or the finest temple created by God? Right? Because it's nature. And when I just read it out loud to you, I realized I probably should have said by God. Anyway, George Door was still working for Acadia National Park when he died in 1944 at the ripe old age of 91 years old. He died while walking the Compass Harbor Trail with his trusted caretaker. He left behind no wife and no children, just the park he loved dearly. He posthumously donated his family's stately 30-room mansion to the park. Sadly, because the United States was heavily involved in World War II at the time, there was little government funding available for state parks, and the home quickly fell into disrepair, despite even surviving a great fire a few years later, which burned more than 1,700 acres of forest surrounding it. That's wild. So it is said that the Doors mansion was quickly demolished just a few years after he passed, and that was like a slap in the face to him, right? This man devoted his entire life to this park, and he wanted the mansion to stay there You know how like around here we have a lot of like really fancy, nice houses that are now just like buildings people work in? I think he kind of had that idea for it. Or like make it into a museum or something. I don't know. But they didn't. They just demolished it. So the stone foundations are still there and the stairwells still stand, but they've kind of become taken over by the land. Like they're really overgrown, but you can still walk on them and hang out in them. There's an elegant stone path that also takes you down to the ocean. So Beth, as you can probably imagine, he never actually left the place.
Of course not.
No. Even with his gorgeous mansion destroyed, the land he preserved was incredibly beautiful. And remember, he was really into transcendentalism and probably felt he'd already found his heaven here on Earth. So some people have reported seeing a man wearing blue, peeking around trees to watch them, or frolicking throughout the woods.
Creep.
Additionally, some other
people... Frolics these days. Definitely not. Frolicking can get you arrested.
Well, not when you're a ghost. And also, sometimes people think it's him. Sometimes people think it's the caretaker. And there's a part of me that's always wondered, like, he didn't have a wife. He didn't have children. It's the early 1900s. There's a lot of talk about his caretaker and him being together all the time. And it almost made me wonder if maybe there was something going on there. I don't know. Some people think that's him. Some people think that's the caretaker. But it's said that if a man with a stutter comes up to you and starts talking about the beauty of the park, that that is George Doerr. And he does that a lot to people. Some people also report seeing a young woman who runs down to Doerr's private beach and disappears. Some connect this to an old Native American burial ground that can be found near the property, but no one's really totally sure who she is. I read in one spot that while he was alive, Doerr would have seances and paranormal investigations on his property, often using a Ouija board. And perhaps he conjured up some spirits of his own there. But what would a paranormal investigation look like in the 1800s, early 1900s? And it was on like a blog that didn't cite any sources. Not that I ever cite any sources on our website, but it just seemed like speculation. Like nowhere else and anywhere I saw was it like he played with Ouija boards. It was just like this one person's random blog. So I don't know if that's true or if it's not true. What I do know is a lot of people claim to see him and or his caretaker frolicking around in the woods. And that is the story.
Are they ever seen frolicking together?
I don't know. I haven't seen them.
Oh, well, fair enough. Well, that was a really fun story, Amelia.
Thanks.
I liked how there was some nature and there were ghosts and, you know, there's all sorts of stuff happening, right?
Yeah.
And
a good ghost story.
Somebody who comes up to you and talks to you about nature and just how great the birds are and the trees and...
Yeah.
Everything's good. So yeah, that was a very nice feel good story to start off with. I have one from a little bit further north in Maine. This story is from the Aroostook County. So Aroostook County is interesting. It is the most northern place in the continental United States. It is surrounded on the west, north, and east by Canada. So it actually like sticks up and it's right between Quebec and St. John in New Brunswick. So it's way up north there. And so I want to talk about a little place there called the Haynesville Road or Route 2A. So it's a super duper small town. In the 2000 census, there were 122 people. In the 2010 census, there were 121 people. So it's definitely a small, small town. It's about 15 minutes from the Canadian border. And the main purpose of Route 2A through Maine was to transport potatoes that were grown in the Canadian Maritimes and Eastern Canada down to Boston to sell off in the potato markets. What do people do with potatoes after they ship them in? The real problem with Route 2A is that it's a nasty, twisty road, and it's especially treacherous in the winter when it's a little icy and snowy. And there's this place called the Haynesville Woods, and it's just a wooded area. And in there are a number of very tricky 90-degree turns. There's S-turns, there's hairpins, and it's really... pretty nasty. There were so many accidents there over the years. I don't think we've ever been able to say this before, but someone wrote a song about it.
Ooh.
So Dick Curless wrote a song about it in 1966. It's called A Tombstone Every Mile. And so that's just talking about the number of truckers who have died along that road and in that stretch. So
all you big and burly men who roll the trucks along, better listen, you'll be thankful when you hear my song. You have really got it made if you're hauling goods any place on earth but those Haynesville woods. It's a stretch of road up north in Maine that's never, ever, ever seen a smile. If they buried all the truckers lost in them woods, there'd be a tombstone every mile. Count them off.
And it just kind of keeps going like that for a while. But I thought it was kind of a snazzy little tune.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. So with all these dead truckers, you figure there's got to be some like dead trucker ghosts, right? You would be wrong. No dead trucker ghosts. So, like I said, that was actually recorded and released in 1966. And then there are reports that in 1967, and in fact, this is a very specific day, August 22nd, 1967, there were two different accidents along that little stretch of Route 2A where two different girls were killed by two different semi-trucks traveling through the region. Now, just as a side note, you know, you were talking about your sources earlier. You would think that in 1967, we had pretty good media coverage, right? There was good record keeping, all that stuff. And something as weird as two girls, they were like 10-year-old girls, getting run over by two different trucks on the same road on the same day. I would have been able to find something about it outside of onlyinyourstate.com, right? Or like just talking about the fact that this is a haunted stretch.
Maybe. My brother went camping up in that area this summer and he said there was nothing there. So I imagine the 60s, there was like even less there. Like who knows if they even had like a newspaper in town.
Mm-hmm. But why would there, the way that this area is described, again, there's 121 people and this road is not like a, I mean, it was a major road, but it's not the sort of place where you would be like walking along. Like there aren't neighborhoods. Like why would there be two little girls out on this road getting run over? And you would just think it would have made the news somehow.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, I couldn't find any reports of accidents on the road. I couldn't find anything, deaths on the road. So I don't know. I just figured that was kind of a standout thing. Anyway, so people will report seeing either one about 10-year-old girl or two 10-year-old girls standing on the side of the road and they're flagging cars down, asking for a ride. And so the girls will get in the car, or one girl gets in the car. And by the end of the road through the woods, this this particular path through Haynesville Woods, they will just disappear out of the car. Just gone. Okay. They just vanish. So that's one of the haunted stories that happens here. Another haunted story about what happens here was based on a newlywed couple, and the time frame around this is unknown, but a newlywed couple goes speeding through the woods, and of course, they run off the road, and they hit a utility pole, and the husband dies on impact, right? The wife, however, manages to climb out of the car, and she's trying to get to the road for help, but she can't make it, and she ends up actually dying. She freezes to death and dies there in the snow. So that's the story of what happened, and that now results in drivers see this woman who's just standing by the side of the road, you know, trying to flag people down, or sometimes she's actually running along like the side of the road. And in my mind, as I read that the first time, I didn't understand it as she would be like running along at like a human speed along the side of the road. I was imagining she was like galloping along, like at the speed of a car going down the road. And it just frightened me terribly. And I don't know why I had that interpretation of it when I first read it. But anyway, what she tells people when they stop for her is, "My husband is trapped in a car. Please come help me. And if you get out to come help her, she vanishes. And if you offer to give her a ride somewhere for help, she gets in the car and she rides along for a little while. But before you get out of the wooded area, she vanishes. I was trying to find some recent information on any deadly accidents on the road, and there really aren't any. But I think that that's less due to it being a less deadly road and more due to Route 95 being completed in the late 50s, early 60s, I think, because this Route 2A was the primary road from the Canada area up there down to meet up with the roads coming down to Boston. But once the highway system got installed, it was less of a common road for people to take. So no recent accidents. And I also couldn't find any firsthand accounts of people who have run into any of these spirits that they see on the road. Usually you can find like one or two people who are like, oh yeah, that happened to me, or I saw that, or, but I wasn't able to find any with this. So it's kind of a fun story. Might be worth a drive through if you're up in that area of the world, but.
Cool. Yeah.
These are fun little drive-by stories. Yours, you have to hike out to. Mine, if you're feeling like a car hiker, definitely get behind my stories this week.
Mine are only all hiking because we said the episode would be haunted hiking trails of Maine.
I don't know where I was supposed to find all these haunted hiking trails.
There's like 50 of them. There's a million. Oh, well, I almost sent you one because it was all about sailors.
Nice. Okay. Well,
okay.
Sorry. I'm not good with directions.
I know. Okay. So I know that. So my next story is very, very short. And it is on the Old Narrow Gauge Trail. So the Old Narrow Gauge Trail is located up in Randolph, Maine. It's a public path for walkers and bicyclists and was constructed along the former Kennebec Central Railroad, which from the 1890s to the 1920s transported passengers and goods to the nation's first veterans hospitals at Togus. Despite it existing for over 100 years, what the trail is actually best known for is the hauntings that have only been going on there for about the last 18 or so years, even though some people in town will tell you it's been haunted long before that.
Wait, 18 years ago is like 2004. I know we want to think that 18 yes. years ago is like sometime in the 70s. It's not.
Exactly. So in fall 2004, this guy around town known as Bicycle Larry, who one place online I saw him referred to as Bicycle Eddie, but for the most part, he's Bicycle Larry, a Randolph man, disappeared and he was never found anywhere. And I kind of liked the story a little bit because over on Lost Souls of America with Jamie next week, she wants to do it all on like psychic stories for her birthday, like spooky disappeared stories. So it's a missing persons case. So I was like, oh, fun. Now I don't have to do as much work this week. So he goes missing and he was never found. And a lot of people think they see his ghost trying to tell them, I'm over here, come find my body. But they never do. So he's always like talking about it and like they see him like gesturing and then they go over and he's not there. But other strange stuff happens in these woods too. From the forest, witnesses reported voices calling out to them, screaming at them. They've seen orbs, they've seen flashes, they've seen dark shadows, and most people often claim to have heard footsteps and felt a feeling of dread. Often, a lot of people will hear the old train whistle from the first ever train that went through the woods. Hmm. And that's my very little short story on the Old Narrow Gauge Trail.
Very nice. How do they know it's the whistle from the very first train that went through the woods? Did it have a unique whistle like wah, wah?
No, but they just said it's like, I don't think it's still there. Like, I don't think there's still trains going through there. So it's like an old timey train whistle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Old timey train whistles are fun so long as you're not trying to sleep. One of my friends has a house actually right at a train crossing and she got a great deal on the house. It's, you know, nice place, big yard, got a pool, you know, big garage and everything. And the only problem is the train goes by a couple of times a day. And I got to tell you, you don't even notice it.
That's awesome.
It really is.
I was actually driving through Needham earlier this week and I was stopped at a train track. And like, how often do you get, I like never get stopped at a train track. So I was thinking about it. I'm like, this is like the third time in my life this has happened. And that's all I could think about. I'm like, all these houses are like so expensive, but you have the train here. Mm-hmm. But if you say you can't hear it, then great.
Well, I mean, I can't speak for those people's houses, but I know that from her house, and she's even right at a crossing. So there's like the things that come down and they do the ding, 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 ding. And
mm-hmm.
you know, it's one of those things that like, you just like, you hear it the first couple of times, but you don't hear it after that.
Sweet.
Nice. All right. So do you want to hear about the White Lady of Millinocket?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't.
All right. Then in that case, I will tell you about, the Brownville Road ghost. All right. So the White Lady of Millinocket is one of those typical, you know, lady in white ghosts. And so this happens probably about 50 miles from the last story that I was talking about, except it's not in the Aroostook County. It's over in the Penobscot County, which, Amelia, did you know that Penobscot County in Maine is absolutely enormous and does not appear to contain the town of Penobscot, Maine?
I did not know that, no.
I did not know that either. See, these are the things you learn doing research for a podcast.
You know, Beth, I got to admit, my knowledge of Penobscot, Maine is extremely limited.
Mine too. Those are literally the two things that I know about it.
One might say I just found out about it when you just brought it up right now.
And that would probably be an accurate statement.
Yes.
All right. So we're back in the 1940s, 1950s. You know, it's a dark night. There's some dense fog. And this couple driving back from their honeymoon, of course, they are coming back from their honeymoon, crashes their car off an embankment off of Brownville Road, and they're right next to this bridge. I'll talk about the bridge a little bit in a second. So the couple actually survives the crash. It's not that bad. And the husband goes off to find help. And he's like, wifey, new wifey, you know, I know this is very upsetting for you. Why don't you stay here, rest, collect your nerves, and I'll be right back with help. So he goes off and he goes to find some help. And when he returns, his wife is gone. Never to be seen again until her spirit started to be seen as a sad figure walking along sections of the road near the old bridge. Now, they showed pictures of the old bridge. This is the sketchiest bridge I think I have ever seen. It is like old gross green paint that's all rusted off. And it has like a suspicious shape to the bridge and everything about it, just the picture of it. I'm like, I don't think that I would want to go near that at all. It didn't look safe. It didn't look fun. It didn't look like somewhere that I needed to be. So anyway, the woman kind of hangs around there. Lots and lots of people have seen her, dozens of people over time. Usually when the weather turns bad, if it gets a little foggy or misty, they start to see her popping up more often, and she's just walking along right along the road. She tends to vanish when she's approached. Anybody goes up to her and she just gone. One of the things that she does like to do, though, because apparently this bridge is close to a little parking area, if you will, is when couples are in their cars steaming up the windows, she goes along and leaves handprints on the outsides of their car. So they see it. Either that or there's some real creep hanging around there, but that's another thing that she is reported to do. So we have in this case, I have actually a quote from somebody who's been there and has, you know, worked with her. Kayla McGinnis, a local sensitive, reports that she's gone out there and she gets the feeling that it's a lady that died. Someone stole the lady's wedding ring and that the lady is here for revenge. She suggests that people bring a necklace, that they ask questions, and she'll show up to talk.
I'm just stuck on, like, okay, why would you need to bring a necklace if this lady had her ring stolen?
I have no idea at all. I don't know, like, why the lady would be here for revenge. But I also think that this is more of an interesting missing persons case, and I would like to know more about the missing persons case.
Yeah.
You know, like, what happened to that lady? Where did she go?
So our final story of the night is Maiden Cliff Trail. Have you heard of this one, Beth?
I did see the title of it, but I didn't read into it because I knew that you were going to be talking about it.
So the Maiden Cliff Trail is part of Camden Hills State Park at the base of Mount Meguntikuk Meguntikook? I don't know. Meguntikook.
Mount M.
Don't know. So on the trail path, you will see a large white steel cross erect right there in the middle of the woods. Well, some people in town might tell you that the cross was placed there for a young woman who threw herself from the cliff as a tragic end of an unrequited love story. The real story is far less poetic, but kind of more interesting. So in the mid-1980s, JK, in the mid-1800s, the land was owned by the French family. One of the youngest daughters of Zadok French was Eleonora, who in 1864 was a mere 12 years old. On May 6th of that year, Eleonora French and a few of her siblings joined a group and headed to the top of what is now Maiden's Cliff for a picnic. During their lunch, a gust of wind blew Eleonora's bonnet off her head, and when she went to chase it, she accidentally fell 300 feet down the cliff.
What?
I know, yeah. Not good.
Wait, there's a 300-foot cliff in Maine?
Yes. And it is called the Maiden Cliff Trail. Well, it's the Maiden Cliff, but the trail goes to there. So she falls down there, and what is weird is that she falls, they find her, she's alive, no broken bones, no visible injuries. But she died later that night from internal injuries, obviously, because that's a long fall and you don't really survive stuff like that. I don't know if it was so much like
a definitely straight, not in the 1800s.
Right. Like, I don't know if it was like a straight cliff fall or if it was like kind of like a hill situation. So unfortunately, she dies. And her story was then told in the Camden-Lincolnville area for years and years and years after her death. In fact, we're telling it right now. The tale touched one of the wealthiest tourists in particular, this inventor named Joseph B. Stearns. And he decided Eleonora would never be forgotten. So he paid for this huge, large cross to be put on the trail in her memory. So weather and vandalism throughout the years has caused the community to replace the cross several times. But they insist on replacing it because they now want to keep this little girl's memory alive. And it's like the big thing in town. Like it's like a point of pride for the people there. And so she is buried. You can go and find her grave. That's why we know what day she died. And it is in the French cemetery in Lincolnville. So I don't know too much about her family. I know they were a big deal because I believe there was like a beach in town, like near the ocean. The ocean was like 4 miles away, and that was like French's beach, and they like had a lot of stuff named after them. And it's like, are they super wealthy, or does just no one live in Maine, or is it like a combination of the two things?
Could be the two things.
I don't know. So while she's in the cemetery, people say she still haunts Maiden Cliff. And if you listen closely on a gusty day, you can still hear her screaming as she falls down to her death.
Oh, that's horrible.
I know, right? Isn't that horrifying?
Oh, yeah, that's terrible, horrifying. Listen to us laugh and laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... That seems like such a strange...
I know.
Okay, well, so we have a screaming ghost. We had some kids run over by tractor trailers. A couple of vanishing women. A stuttering man who likes to talk about the trees. What was your second one?
Was Bicycle Larry.
Oh, Bicycle Larry. Yeah, don't forget about Bicycle Larry. So anyway, these and other fun sights in Maine that Amelia loves and Beth is pretty sure is just a stopover on a place on a way to somewhere better.
Yeah, Maine's pretty cool. I dig Maine.
I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, where is it? Like Amelia likes Maine. What state is it that I like?
I feel like you always put a lot of emphasis on me liking Maine, and I do like Maine, but I really like Vermont.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
Vermont, I would say Vermont, with the possible exception of Hawaii, I would say Vermont's probably my favorite state. Like in my dreams, California is my favorite state, and it always will be my favorite state, but I've never been there. So it's like a dream favorite state. And I've met some pretty weird people out of Oregon. So like cool, weird.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm very intrigued by the West Coast, despite never really having been there.
Maybe that's why you're intrigued by it. You've never been.
I've always wanted to move out there, but I've always said that I can't visit because it'll be like giving up on my dream when I have to come back. So I only want to go there when I move there. So.
Oh.
Someday. Someday.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks.
I don't know why anyone would want to move away from here. I like it here. I'm comfortable.
Well, let's see. The people aren't nice. The weather sucks. No, I'm just kidding. Boston's fine. The weather does suck, though. And the people
aren't. Well, today, but not in general. I think the weather's fine here. And I don't mind that the people here are mean because I'm mean. So we get along. They leave me alone. I leave them alone, which isn't true at all. I like chat up people in the supermarket line. And
you are a very outgoing person.
Sometimes I am. It's true.
Yeah.
I was having lunch the other day and the two women waiting at the door were like, not like hovering over our table. They were like a polite distance away, but I just out of nowhere looked at them and I'm like, this is the gyro. You should get this and you should split it. Like just because it was huge and it was delicious.
Did they follow your advice?
I don't know if they did, but they did start chatting with us. And then as I was leaving, I turned to my lunch date and I was like, see, I even talk to people in lines and restaurants now. I'm very outgoing.
Me, on the other hand, I will never talk to anyone unprovoked. And I feel like people think I'm very outgoing. Like I come across as outgoing, but I'm not. This episode comes out in March. And after March is April, and after April is May. And once it hits May, the weather starts to get really nice. So I'm being really positive and looking forward to it.
Once it hits May, Amelia officially wraps around her first year of marriage. And Ooh. She gets to no longer be a newlywed.
Oh, I like being a newlywed.
Yeah, be a newlywed.
Old people talk to me as long as you want. Old people talk to me a lot. And I like old people. So
do you talk to them unprovoked?
I think I used to. I used to. And then I got really burnt out on people and I never do now. And I have social anxiety, so I really never do.
Oh, see, I randomly strike up conversations with people who I know I'm never going to see again. And I make them laugh and then I walk away and I feel like my job is done for today.
There you go.
Just one of those services I provide to mankind.
World's a better place because of people like you out there, Beth.
Absolutely. So no mail, no drive-by ghostings, no reviews.
Nope. I got nothing.
Wow.
I feel like I'm going to have to like write a fake review next week. Something.
Somebody send us a review so Amelia doesn't have to write a fake review.
You got anything else, Beth?
When you're in a restaurant, please keep your distance from me at the table. I will happily talk to you about what you should order, but not if you're hanging over my table.
Do you often find people hanging over your table at restaurants, Beth?
No, I was just saying it because I said that the ladies earlier were not doing that.
Yeah.
So it's just a good point of etiquette. I don't know why you don't notice these things when you go into restaurants. Like I'm very interested in watching what the people are doing. So yeah, I do have one more thing. Unfortunately, I will be on vacation that weekend that we were supposed to go to the S.K. Pierce Mansion. So I'm not going to be able to go. Amelia, are you able to go?
I am unable to go. And Paul is unable to go and he was going to come too. So that's a bummer. But Beth is going to Iceland and that's very exciting.
Beth is always going somewhere. Unfortunately, it is not to the S.K. Pierce Museum with Boston Paranormal Investigators. But
well, at least not that night.
Well, at least not that night. That's true. But if you guys are interested in maybe hooking up with them for that tour,
you can go on our website and find the link to their website, though.
Oh, yeah. Or you can go on Facebook. They're on Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook.com, Boston Paranormal Investigators. Yeah. BPI.
$75 a person.
It was going to be really fun. And we've gone on stuff with them before and they are a great group of people. So if you've always wanted to go somewhere, this is your chance. Amelia just got bit by a spider or something. So
I didn't, but it reminded me of something very exciting that we have to say that I didn't even tell Beth about, but now we're all finding out together. So I also had gotten tickets to Duo Demonology. They were doing something at the Hinsdale House out in New York. Very haunted, largely considered one of the most haunted houses in all of the United States. This is going to be big. And they have agreed to let us do an Instagram giveaway for two tickets to go up on March 19th, Saturday night, and go investigate with them. They're demonologists. They're going to do the whole thing. It's going to be spooky. It's going to be scary. You're going to get stuff. So if you are into paranormal investigating, if you want to be a ghost hunter, don't miss this opportunity. Go on to Instagram. The contest is going to end on Friday, March 4th. This is for Saturday, March 19th. So go on to Instagram. Enter our contest and you can get two tickets to go to the Hinsdale House in New York and do some ghost hunting with some demonologists. Cool.
Very cool.
That'll be a lot of fun. I'm actually disappointed. I really wanted to go to that. I really wanted to go to that. There's a lot of stuff I really wanted to do, but you know what? We'll do it another time.
Yep.
Beth, is this your first time going to Iceland?
This is my first time going to Iceland. I am going with one of my mom friends, and we are going to go and do the highlights, a little recon trip for if we want to go back when it's not winter.
What are you most looking forward to seeing?
Oh, I don't even know yet. I saw there's a lava tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of thinking maybe I would do that. Maybe
lava tunnels are cool. They're cool.
I was thinking to myself, actually, as I was reading about it, I was like, you know, that's exactly the sort of thing that would happen to me. This lava tunnel has been dormant for 1,000 years, and I go in to just tour through like anybody has done for the last 100 years, and the lava tunnel explodes and I get wiped out by flaming lava. And then I was thinking, but wouldn't Bob always have an amazing story to tell? So what happened to your mom?
Well, the lava doesn't erupt through the tube.
I figure it's got to come through the tube.
No. Lava tubes are from the ones I've been in. I haven't been to ones in Iceland, but I've been to other ones. It's when the lava flows out and then like a tunnel is created, like far away, like a mile away.
Like a mile away?
It's like a tube made out of like dried lava from an eruption. See,
I thought it was a place on the volcano that had like blasted out the side.
Mm-mm.
I might have to rethink this.
Yeah, they're cool. I mean, I haven't been to one in Iceland, but I have been to them in other places and they're neat. They're fun.
We'll do the stuff.
You got to go to the Blue Lagoon.
I've heard that.
Yeah, it was really nice. I really enjoyed it. That was a big highlight for us. Blue Lagoon. And they have fairy parks there. For me, that was like the big highlight I really wanted to see. And I got to go to one. And it was cool.
Very neat. So that's where people just build fairy houses and just leave them.
Yeah.
Very neat.
And people always are like, oh, well, 50% of Icelanders think that like fairies and elves are real. And I'm like, that's not that high of a percent. Like if you like, no matter where you go in the world, people are going to think like 50% or more are going to believe in what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Iceland getting a bad rap for that. They're cool.
Oh yeah. I can't imagine thinking badly of somebody because they believe in fairies, but we do a podcast on ghost hunting. So we might be a little biased.
Yeah. But like even people around here, like people believe in like angels and other stuff. Like there's always things people believe in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Iceland's fun. You're going to have a good time there.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm very much looking forward to it. Anything else? Fit to print?
I got nothing. Do you want to contact us out?
I do not. You do it so much better than I do.
All right. You guys can find us online at ghosthuntingnewengland.com, on facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter, ghosthuntingne, and on Instagram at ghosthuntinginnewengland. You can send us an email to ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com or at carrierpigeon2pancakeshouse. And as always,
happy hunting.